The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening. This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Where are we, right here? Meanwhile, folks, you know who still exists? White House senior advisor Ivanka Trump. Today, Ivanka sat down for an interview, and she came admirably close to displaying empathy.
Now, a low point in the White House for a number of your colleagues was the kids at the border issue. What is your view of that?
Yes. That was a low point for me as well.
But somehow I got through it by saying and doing nothing. And what does she mean by was a low point? It's still happening. That's like being inside your burning house going, you know, when this chair I'm sitting in caught fire, that was a real wake-up call. Do you smell anything? But Ivanka assures us that her dad stealing children is giving her the feels.
I feel very strongly about that. And I am very vehemently against family separation.
Family separation.
And the separation of parents and children.
Just imagine how upset she'll be when the feds drag away Don Jr.
Ah.
Then Ivanka tackled the burning issue of her father's attacks on journalism.
Do you think that we're the enemy of the people?
Sorry?
Do you think
Sorry?
The media is
Sorry?
The enemy of the people?
No, I do not.
No, I do not.
That's not a view that's shared in your family.
Are you looking for me to elaborate?
And sure.
No, I don't.
Wait.
Seriously?
He asked you to elaborate. No, I don't is actually shorter than saying no, I do not. So you did not elaborate. Would you like me to elaborate on that? You didn't. And the president noticed Ivanka was on TV because it involved two of his favorite things, Ivanka and TV. So he tweeted, they asked my daughter Ivanka whether or not the media is the enemy of the people. She correctly said, no, it is the fake news, which is a large percentage of the media that is the enemy of the people. See? That. No, that clears it up. Trump supporters, when you see the media at the next rally, make sure you violently threaten only a large percentage of them. Mike Allen also threw her only the hardest of softballs.
Your high point and low point in the White House.
Oh, wow. So, my high point, there have been so many high points.
Oh, God.
That took her a while. She seemed a little glazed. She seems like this is one of her high points. But she did, in fairness, she eventually did come up with a high point of her job.
I love getting out of Washington.
Oh, God.
The high point of your job is leaving your job? What a coincidence. That's my high point of your job, too. Then Then she finally answered.
Tax reform. That was a real high moment for me. I worked really hard with an amazing team of people to make that happen.
You helped Republicans pass tax reform the way my nephew helps me mow the lawn with his bubble mower. Really? What did you do? What do you do? We'll be right back with Chloe Grace.
Oh, Stephen Colbert, where would we be without him? Certainly a lot less, laughing a lot less. Again, I'll say it. I try to start off the show with something funny because the news is not funny at all. If it weren't so serious, it would be hysterically funny. I mean, the whole prospect of this megalomaniac guy who is a reality TV show scam artist becoming president of the United States, the whole thing is so laughable that, again, if somebody proposed this as a movie script, it never would have gotten made because it's too unfeasible. Unfeasible, is that a word? You would think it couldn't happen, but here it did. This is the reality we're living through. Anyway, welcome to a Friday. I'm Nicole Sandler. Yesterday, sorry for my emotional outburst. It's still tough digesting the news about Joel Silberman. I'm watching some of the coverage from Netroots Nation, and they did a big tribute to him there. And they're doing somebody brought in a piano, and they're doing a sing along of show tunes to honor Joel. They've also set up a couple of scholarships in his name, which is really nice. I got so many emails and tweets and communications from you listeners who remembered Joel from the many times he's appeared on this show. And so what I thought I would do is this coming Wednesday, we'll play back his last appearance on the show. You get a taste for those of you who don't know who Joel is. You'll get an idea of why so many of us are really hurting with his loss. You'll get some laughs too, and you'll get a few choice bits of knowledge from Joel because he was a teacher among everything else he did. So we'll do that on Wednesday of next week. Today, being that we are, I think, 96 days from the midterm election, and yes, I know we say it all the time, but this is the most important election of our lifetimes. Seriously, this time, if we don't put a check on Trump's power, I shudder to think of what the next 2 years would hold. So at the very least, we need to get the House to flip to control of the Democrats. In a perfect world, the Senate would come under Democratic control as well. I know the Democrats are far from perfect, but they're heads and tails above the Republicans. And we need, this government of ours, this democracy or actually republic that we live in, only functions because of its system of checks and balances. There's the three branches of government. You've got the executive, which is the president. You've got the legislative branch, which is Congress. Both of them are, under Republican control. And not just any Republicans. These are not the somewhat sane Republicans of the past. These are batshit crazy, right-wing nutjob Republicans. And then you have the judicial branch, which we're talking about the Supreme Court, really, and the other courts, which Trump is packing with right-wing crazy, batshit crazy Republican judges. And so the only way we can stop that momentum and have some hope for generations to come that things won't be batshit right-wing crazy in this country is to put a check on him right now. And the only way we can do that is in November. So voting and electing the better, the best progressive, most progressive candidates we can get. So our guest today is Truman Town says we need more Manchins and Jones. Actually, we do, because there are many places in this country that won't elect progressives. And it's in Alabama and West Virginia, that we do need the kind of Republicans, the kind of Democrats that Republicans can vote for, because there are a lot of Republicans who understand, or former Republicans who understand that the damage that Trump and his ilk are doing to this country. So in those states, in those districts even, the blue dog and the new Dem is by all means preferable to the to the Republican, just in terms of controlling the chambers of Congress. Democrats have no power of subpoena or to hold hearings or anything in the House while a Republican is the speaker, while the Republicans have control. So if the Democrats can take back control of the House, they can start holding hearings, impeachment hearings. That starts in the House. If we get the Senate too, so much the better. So our guest today is a guy named Billy Wimsett. He's been on the program before. He's an activist, a real activist who's done so much. He's co-founded a bunch of organizations, including the League of Young Voters Ready for Warren. He was one of the people advocating for Elizabeth Warren to get into the race, instead of Hillary Clinton. Rebuild the Dream. He helped found that with Van Jones. Today, he'll be here in his role. He's the founder and the director of the Movement Voter Project. And chances are you haven't heard of the Movement Voter Project yet. That's what we're going to talk to you about today. And it's about, I'll let him tell you, but it's a great organization that is pushing for funding for grassroots organizations all over the country that are doing the on-the-ground work in each district to elect Democrats. Because sometimes we don't see these groups. We don't know that they're, we don't know that this work is being done, and it's important that we do. It's also important to find out about these groups because maybe there's a group there in your neck of the woods that you would like to join because it's more important now than ever before. So, what's news today? A big part of it is made up of a clip I played yesterday. It happened yesterday. During the press briefing where Jim Acosta of CNN asked Sarah Sanders to say that the media is not the enemy of the people. This is a Stalinist phrase. It's something that Stalin used. Stalin called the press the enemy of the people. And Donald Trump, President of the United States, has been saying that. I played it yesterday on the show, so I don't know that I need to play it again today. So I think what we'll do is, instead of What's News, which plays throughout the day on the Progressive Voices channel, maybe we'll have time for it later. What I want to do, because so much of what's going on is reminiscent of fascism, it's that creeping fascism, and I threatened a couple of weeks ago to pull this out and play it again. Back shortly after Donald Trump was inaugurated, just seeing the first few things he did, it so shook me that I went back and found this article that was written, I forget the guy's name, it's the 14 characteristics of fascism. And I gave it the What's News treatment back when I was putting a lot of music and different things. I was being a lot more creative with What's News, before my little mini breakdown. And, This is where we are now. The press secretary, the White House press secretary, could not say the words, "No, I don't believe that the press is the enemy of the people." And so I thought we're falling into fascism. So I thought today would be a good day to bring out my little production piece on the special 14 characteristics of fascism. Maybe we'll make it shareable on YouTube because it is that important. So here we go. Take it away, Nicole.
An article entitled 14 Defining Characteristics of Fascism, written by Lawrence W. Britt, was published in 2003 by Free Inquiry magazine. Given what the Trump administration has done and attempted to do, I thought it was time to revisit that piece and give it the what's news treatment. Let's get started with number one. Powerful and continuing nationalism. Fascist regimes tend to make constant use of patriotic mottos, slogans, symbols, songs, and other paraphernalia. Flags are seen everywhere, as are flag symbols on clothing and in public displays.
From this day forward, a new vision will govern our land. From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first.
Number two, disdain for the recognition of human rights.
Equal rights and justice.
Because of fear of enemies and the need for security, the people in fascist regimes are persuaded that human rights can be ignored in certain cases because of need. The people tend to look the other way or even approve of torture, summary executions, assassinations, long incarcerations of prisoners, etc.
Mr. President, you told me during one of the debates that you would bring back waterboarding and a hell of a lot worse.
I want to keep our country safe. I want to keep our country safe.
What does that mean?
When they're shooting, when they're chopping off the heads of our people and other people, when they're chopping off the heads of people because they happen to be a Christian in the Middle East, when ISIS is doing things that nobody has ever heard of since medieval times, would I feel strongly about waterboarding? As far as I'm concerned, we have to fight fire with fire. I have spoken as recently as 24 hours ago with people at the highest level of intelligence, and I asked them the question, does torture work? And the answer was yes, absolutely.
Number three, identification of enemies and scapegoats as a unifying cause.
Short people got no reason to live. They got little hands, little eyes. They walk around telling great big lies.
The people are rallied into a unifying patriotic frenzy over the need to eliminate a perceived common threat or foe.
Lock her up. That's right.
Racial, ethnic, or religious minorities, liberals, communists, socialists, terrorists. You got the idea?
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
Number four, supremacy of the military. Even when there are widespread domestic problems, the military is given a disproportionate amount of government funding, and the domestic agenda is neglected. Soldiers and military service are glamorized.
We're going to build up our great military. We're going to build it up. We're going to strengthen our borders. We're going to do things that haven't been done for our country for many, many decades. It's going to change. I promise you, it's going to change.
Number five, rampant sexism.
I'll admit it.
Whoa.
I did try and fuck her. She was married.
That's huge news there.
I moved in her like a bitch, but I couldn't get there, and she was married. And all of a sudden, I see her. She's now got the big phony tits and everything. I gotta use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the pussy. I could do anything.
I say, let us put man and a woman together to find out which one is smarter. Some say men, but I say no.
The governments of fascist nations tend to be almost exclusively male-dominated. Under fascist regimes, traditional gender roles are made more rigid. Divorce, abortion, and homosexuality are suppressed, and the state is represented as the ultimate guardian of the family institution.
That's right, the woman is smarter. That's right, the woman is smarter. That's right, the woman is That's right.
Number six, controlled mass media.
Well, I got nothing against the press. They wouldn't print it if it wasn't true.
As you know, I have a running war with the media. They are among the most dishonest human beings on earth. I get up this morning, I turn on one of the networks, and they show an empty field. I said, wait a minute, I made a speech.
I looked out. The field was, it looked like a million and a half people. They showed a field where there were practically nobody standing.
Sometimes the media is directly controlled by the government, but in other cases, the media is indirectly controlled by government regulation or sympathetic media spokespeople and executives. Censorship.
A reminder that the president's top aide just told the New York Times that the press should keep its mouth shut. No.
Especially in wartime, is very common. Number 7, obsession with national security.
We will reinforce old alliances and form new ones and unite the civilized world against radical Islamic terrorism, which we will eradicate completely from the face of the earth.
Fear is used as a motivational tool by the government over the masses. Number 8, religion and government are intertwined.
'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Governments in fascist nations tend to use the most common religion in the nation as a tool to manipulate public opinion.
Just over a year and a month since candidate Trump called for, and I quote here, a complete and total shutdown of Muslims entering the United States, President Trump today signed an executive order aimed at fulfilling at least part of that goal, hewing closely to the rhetoric of banning entry to the United States based on country of origin and possibly even religion.
Religious rhetoric and terminology is common from government leaders, even when the major tenets of the religion are diametrically opposed to the government's policies or actions.
We come to you, Heavenly Father, in the name of Jesus.
Number 9, corporate power is protected.
We are going to be cutting taxes massively for both the middle class and for companies. When somebody wants to put up a factory, it's going to be expedited. We think we can cut regulations by 75%, maybe more, but by 75%.
The industrial and business aristocracy of a fascist nation often are the ones who put the government leaders into power, creating a mutually beneficial business/government relationship and power elite. Number 10, labor power is suppressed.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more.
Taxes too high, wages too high. We're not going to be able to compete against the world. I hate to say it, but we have to leave it the way it is. People have to go out, they have to work really hard, and they have to get into that upper stratum. Our wages are too high. Everything's too high.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more.
Because the organizing power of labor is the only real threat to a fascist government, labor unions are either eliminated entirely or are severely suppressed.
Trump isn't just tweeting that unions aren't doing a good job. He actually, Leo, is putting his money where his mouth is. Today, he picked Andrew Puzder for labor secretary. That is the CEO of the company that owns Carl's Jr. and Hardee's. He is a vocal critic of minimum wage increases. On this issue, he said businesses create jobs, labor unions do not. To the contrary, labor unions often discourage businesses from creating jobs, particularly entry level ones, by increasing the cost of labor without increasing its value. Is he the right pick for labor secretary?
No, absolutely not. He's completely wrong.
Number 11, disdain for intellectuals and the arts.
Something touched me deep inside the day the music died.
As President-elect Donald Trump prepares to take the oath of office, his transition team has reportedly been considering massive budget cuts to significantly reduce federal spending. According to a report published by The Hill on Thursday, the goal is to slash federal spending by $10.5 trillion over the next decade. It reports many departments, including energy and justice, would face cuts, but two agencies reportedly on the chopping block got quite a bit of attention. Those agencies are the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Endowment for the Humanities. They fund arts and humanities programs across the country, including at museums and educational institutions. Not long after the report was published, the National Endowment for the Arts tweeted this nearly four-minute video about what it's done for American society.
Human beings not only define who they are, but who they want to be through the arts.
So would eliminating those two agencies make a dent? According to our math, the budgets of each agency accounted for less than 0.04% of federal spending in fiscal year 2016. But if the team did aim to cut $10.5 trillion in 10 years, or a little over $1 trillion per year, there wouldn't be much left. As a writer for The New Yorker pointed out, that would account for about all annual federal discretionary spending.
Fascist nations tend to promote and tolerate open hostility to higher education and academia.
I love the poorly educated.
It's not uncommon for professors and other academics to be censored or even arrested. Free expression in the arts and letters is openly attacked.
Well, President-elect up early on Twitter.
He sure is going to war with Hollywood's most celebrated actress. He went on a Twitter firestorm here. It starts, Meryl Streep, one of the most overrated actresses in Hollywood, doesn't know me, but attacked last night at the Golden Globes. She is a Hillary flunky who lost big. For the 100th time, I never mocked a disabled reporter, would never do that, but simply showed him groveling when he totally changed a 16-year-old story that he had written in order to make me look bad. Just more very dishonest media.
Number 12, obsession with crime and punishment. Under fascist regimes, the police are given almost limitless power to enforce laws.
We have to bring back law and order. Now, whether or not in a place like Chicago you do stop and frisk, which worked very well, Mayor Giuliani is here, but you take the gun away from criminals that shouldn't be having it.
Police and thieves in the street. Oh, yeah. Scaring the nation with their guns and ammunition.
The people are often willing to overlook police abuses and even forego civil liberties in the name of patriotism. There is often a national police force with virtually unlimited power in fascist nations.
The president tweeted, "If Chicago doesn't fix the horrible carnage going on, 228 shootings in 2017 with 42 killings, up 24% from 2016, I will send in the feds."
Number 13. Rampant cronyism and corruption.
CBS News estimates 7 of Mr. Trump's picks are worth a combined $11.5 billion. Betsy DeVos, nominated for Secretary of Education, comes from a family worth more than $5 billion. Linda McMahon, picked for Small Business Administrator, has family wealth worth $1.2 billion. And Vincent Viola, Mr. Trump's choice for Army Secretary, is worth $1.77 billion.
I guess they have a few poor millionaires on it, but mostly it's billionaires.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Well, I'd buy you a house.
I would buy you a house.
And if I had $1 million.
Fascist regimes almost always are governed by groups of friends and associates who appoint each other to government positions and use governmental power and authority to protect their friends from accountability. It's not uncommon in fascist regimes for national resources and even treasures to be appropriated or even outright stolen by government leaders.
And you don't appoint the cabinet of billionaires to be taken on the establishment.
Steve Mnuchin, Mr. Trump's Treasury pick, has been estimated to be worth as much as $655 million. He and Commerce Secretary nominee Wilbur Ross, worth $2.5 billion, recently said they were attuned to the plight of working Americans.
If I have $1 million. I'd be rich.
But not by Trump administration or cabinet standards. Number 14, fraudulent elections.
So why not definitively say that he will investigate if he believes in the administration's right. position is that there was massive voter fraud?
Well, first of all, the comment that he made was he said 3 to 5 million people, you know, could have voted illegally.
Sometimes elections in fascist nations are a complete sham. Other times, elections are manipulated by smear campaigns against or even assassination of opposition candidates.
Crooked Hillary, fuck. She's been crooked from the beginning, and to think that she has a shot at being our president, crooked Hillary Clinton. We can't let it happen. You can't let it happen.
Use of legislation to control voting numbers or political district boundaries and manipulation of the media.
So why not definitively say that he will investigate if he believes in the administration position is that there was massive voter fraud?
Well, first of all, the comment that he made was he said 3 to 5 million people, you know, could have voted illegally.
Fascist nations also typically use their judiciaries to manipulate or control elections.
I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
That's it, the 14 definitive characteristics of fascism, as written by Lawrence Britt, published in 2003, and given the What's News treatment by me. I'm Nicole Sandler of NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network, telling you we are living in seriously dangerous times. It's up to us to resist every day, fight fascism.
And that's today's dose of What's News, written and produced by Nicole Sandler. Hear the Nicole Sandler Show live Tuesday through Friday, 3 to 4 Eastern, 12 to 1 Pacific, at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, of course, now we're on 6 to 7 p.m. on the Progressive Voices Network, still heard live from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern. All right, we'll take a break. Come back on the other side with Billy Wimsett next. Don't go away. It's Nicole Sandler Show.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
These are the sounds of crushed souls. The sounds of despair from former radio personalities languishing in the purgatory of corporate consolidation. These former radio personalities have lost their livelihoods, not because they weren't entertaining or informative, but because they don't meet today's corporate terrestrial broadcast standards of being smelly, overweight douchebags, seething with vein-popping hatred. These radio refugees and their audiences have since migrated to the internet, but their struggle continues as the quest for monetization ensues. Nicole Sandler is leading the way to reestablishing thought-provoking and entertaining radio. And you can help by clicking the donate button on NicoleSandler.com. Donate today, or as much and as often as you can. Dry the tears of listeners by removing the rotting stench of corporate radio. Won't you help?
All right, I'm back. Time to get busy, right? Billy Wimsett has 20 years of experience in journalism, social entrepreneurship. He co-founded several organizations, including the League of Young Voters, Ready for Warren, Solidaire, and Rebuild the Dream. He's involved in philanthropy and consulting, but he's here today in his new role as director of the Movement Voter Project. You can find them at movement.vote and on Twitter, at Movement Vote. Hey, Billy.
Hi, Nicole.
How are you doing?
Good. You hear me okay?
I hear you loud and clear. Hopefully you can hear me okay.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, well, thank you for doing this. So I heard about the Movement Voter Project in an email list that we're on, and I was immediately intrigued because it sounds different from a lot of the other efforts that are out there. You know, for instance, Howie Klein is my regular guest every Thursday, and he and Digby and John Amato run the Blue America PAC, and they help raise money for they help identify and raise money for the best progressive candidates out there. Kind of discouraging people from giving money to the DCCC or the DNC because they tend to squander it on the wrong candidates and not support the real progressive ones. But what you're doing with the Movement Voter Project is different. So I wanted to have you on to explain what you do and how people can get involved.
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, this all came about because there are all these local groups that no one's ever heard of. In, you know, for instance, in Florida, there's Florida Immigrant Coalition. In Ohio, there's Ohio Student Association. There are all these great groups that, you know, that fight on issues every day, that turn out voters in pretty huge numbers. And no one's ever heard of them. They're not going to call you to ask for a donation. They're not going to email you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so most people, when they want to help a candidate or when they want to help out in an election, you know, we're bombarded with all these groups, you know, coming to us. And a lot of the groups that are really kind of doing the best work to win those elections and turn out those voters are these, you know, small local groups, often based in communities of color and you know, with young people. And so basically we did the research, so you don't have to, you know, kind of Better Homes and Gardens, you know, vetted them.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to wonder like which groups are good or whatever. And we put them all on the movement.vote website and we created funds. So if you care about the House, if you care about the Senate, you know, if you care about governors and redistricting, there are funds we've set up where you can one click donate to a basket of groups that we've vetted in, you know, in all the critical states and races, to just make it really easy, for the average progressive, you know, donor to support these groups. So if you go on there, you can either choose a group that you like, you know, or a bunch of groups you like. You can search by issues, by state, by tax status, by constituency. If you want to fund, you know, Asian, you know, Pacific Islander driven groups, you know,
mm-hmm.
In the South, you know, led by, you know, that have a climate lens, you can find those groups. Right. And then, you know, and for bigger donors, you know, some bigger donors call us and they're like, okay, this is a great list, but you know, I'm trying to move $100,000, you know, and I only have, C3 money. So what do I do? You know, and then we give people pro bono advising, you know, almost like we work for them. We survey, you know, what kind of things do you care about? And we basically try to make it easy for donors to give to this world of groups that they don't otherwise, you know, kind of wouldn't know where to start.
Right. And the website is great. There's one section that I'm looking at right now where you have all the groups where you can pull them up either by the type of states that you're looking at, whether they're purple states, light blue states, light red states, dark blue states. You can pull them up like that. You can pull up issue areas. So if your issue is climate and the environment, you can click there and you'll get a bunch of those kind of groups. Economic justice, immigrant rights, LGBTQ, mass criminalization, racial justice, reproductive justice, and voting rights, as you mentioned, constituencies, and nonprofit types even. So if you have a group that's coming to you that has money to give, but they can only give to, you know, 501c3s as opposed to 501c4s, or they want to give to PACs, or they want to give to a party. You have them all separated like that. How long did it take to put all this together?
Yeah, well, we actually started it as a Google Doc in 2014.
Wow.
And so many people were like, oh, we need this information. You know, that in 2016, we spent about 6 months, doing the research. We ran it by a lot of different people, you know, groups in the state, other funders, national organizations, you know, and it's always a work in progress. We're actually in the process of adding about 100 more groups.
Wow.
To the list, which is a big undertaking because we're also trying to help, you know, emerging groups. So for instance, we haven't even added them yet. We just started moving money to this group in Kansas City called KSMOTA, Kansas Missouri Dream Alliance.
Hmm.
So you know, these are young immigrant rights organizers. You know, they're doing a vote program for the first time, you know, which is going to help the Senate race in Missouri and the House races in Kansas, you know, and in a lot of places, and especially, you know, in a place like Florida or Michigan or whatever, you know, you can give to a candidate or you can give to a group that's going to turn out, you know, progressive, you know, mostly voters of color who might not vote otherwise. And then that's going to help every race up and down the ballot, right?
Right.
It's going to help the governor, the Senate, the Secretary of State, you know, the House race, and then all the local stuff too. So it's a really, really good bang for the buck. And especially because, you know, a lot of people, they're like, oh, I don't want my money to go to TV ads and consultants, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like even if you lose the election, you helped build something in a community that will be there after the election. And that, you know, a lot of these groups, you know, where do these great candidates come from? A lot of these groups help recruit them. Some of them come from the memberships of these organizations, you know, so it's a long-term transformative thing to help communities as well as winning. And we actually have a pretty amazing track record of helping win elections because, you know, we kind of play in all the competitive districts. So like in 2016, people didn't pay much attention to New Hampshire, you know, because people think, Hillary's going to win New Hampshire. You know, so there are these four little groups there that no one's ever heard of that, you know, we invested, you know, and by we, I mean like dozens of us, you know, and actually hundreds of donors gave to these groups. We moved them $185,000 in
Wow.
New Hampshire. They knocked in 85,000 doors. And, and Maggie Hassan won her Senate race by just 1,027 votes.
Wow.
So, you know, these teeny tiny obscure groups no one's ever heard of flipped that Senate seat, which is why, you know, we're one vote short in the Senate right now instead of two.
Mm-hmm.
So in Alabama, you know, when there's a special election there, we gave the first money to these two groups started by Black women, Woke Vote and Black Voters Matter. And they did incredible work. And collectively, you know, so many people piled on. We ended up moving, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And they ended up, if you remember before the Doug Jones race, there was all this story of like, oh, Black voters aren't inspired by
right.
Doug Jones.
Yep.
They're not turning out. And then on election night, it's like, whoa, Black turnout is through the roof. How did this happen? And they weren't inspired by Doug Jones, but their message was, it's about us, right? And
right.
So they hired 600 local organizers in 17 counties, including all these rural counties, got completely ignored. And, you know, and they helped swing that Senate race. And now both of those groups, Woke Vote and Black Voters Matter, are expanding throughout the South.
That's great.
You know?
That's great. I know you
so
wrote
in Tennessee and Northern Florida. Yeah.
Right. You wrote in an email to me that, for instance, take North Dakota. Most of us don't love Heidi Heitkamp, but we need her to win because of control of the Senate and the Supreme Court and everything. So why not fund a Native vote group that will help her and their own community at the same time? So you have this group, North Dakota Native Vote is one of the groups that you're working with?
Exactly. Yeah, we love them. And we also, in places where there are gaps, we actually help try to seed groups. So in North Dakota, you know, there are four towns that have, you know, decent liberal populations that have very little organizing. So
mm-hmm.
we're actually seeding college groups in those four towns. So, you know, where possible, we fund local groups. And, you know, but especially on college campuses or, you know, in communities that have gotten ignored, we it's called the Movement Voter Project for a reason because, you know, one of the other underlying things is like, you know, most people who are involved in protest movements, you know, think about Standing Rock, Black Lives Matter,
mm-hmm.
you know, Dreamer movements, et cetera, aren't necessarily like big on electoral politics.
Right.
You know, they.
Right.
There's a big cultural divide, right, between people who do kind of, you know, lefty protest stuff and vote work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually, you know, come from those worlds. I didn't vote myself till I was 27. I thought
really?
I was like selling out to vote, right?
Wow.
So it wasn't until the 2000 election where I was like, holy crap, we just lost Florida by 537 votes.
Mm-hmm.
I could have done something about that. And now we have all this terribleness. So that was like my biggest wake up call. And so what we do is we work with all these movement-y groups, like the young people who did, you know, Moral Mondays and Scaled the Flagpole in North and South Carolina. You know, when we first started talking to them, a group called Southern Vision Alliance, you know, they were not interested in doing vote work. And we said, well, you know, maybe, you know, and we talked them through it, and they were like, oh, okay, we actually could do some vote work. And they started doing it a little bit, and now they do it, you know, big in, like, I think 13 counties in North Carolina. This Southern Vision Alliance group is, you know, they combine kind of movement culture where a lot of the vitality and energy and passion is, and they say, hey, we can also do vote work too when it comes time to do it. So anyway, we help movement groups do vote work too.
Right. I like on the front page when you go to movement.vote, it says water the grassroots, build bigger waves, win everywhere. And your goal is to get $10 million distributed to these groups. You've already, according to the counter on the website, you're already at $5.6 million donated to 165 groups, which is great. Because a lot of these groups, they are small grassroots groups that don't have a lot of recognition. They don't have a lot of funding sources. So you're helping them in that way. The other thing that I wanted to put out there is, you know, a lot of us don't necessarily have money that we can donate, but we want to get involved. And you don't necessarily, you know, your local Democratic club is not exactly earth-shaking, but you want to get involved with another group. This is a great resource to find some groups that you can join in with, right?
Yeah, locally. I mean, the truth is, you know, a lot of these groups are, you know, there's a whole other world of you know, kind of newer resistance groups like the Indivisibles and Swing Lefts and Flippables, and you know, they're actually better set up to take lots of new volunteers. You know, especially, you know, folks who are like, you know, white people over 40, you know,
yes,
who are like, you know, getting involved. So honestly, getting involved in those groups is probably, you know, like, in many cases, you know, just an easier way to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, you know, like a group like, you know, I was mentioning Florida Immigrant Coalition, they're really focused on organizing, you know, immigrants in Florida. And, you know, so if you are an immigrant in Florida, that's a great place for you. If you're not, it may not be the best
right.
place to,
sure.
you know, the same with Ohio Student Association or whatever. And we actually learned that lesson because we were like, oh, let's help volunteers like go to Wisconsin and volunteer with our groups. It turned out a lot of our groups weren't really well set up, you know, to deal with like a bunch of, you know, out of state volunteers.
Right.
But, you know, so it's an ecosystem, you know, and like, different groups play different important roles. You know, and in terms of money, it's like, you know, anyone can organize a bake sale or can organize, you know, and what we tell people is like, you know, even if you're donating like $1, you know, if you donate and testify about it, you know, on social media, like, cause the problem is, thank you so much for having us on the show. Cause I feel like this is like a best kept secret. Like no one knows this thing exists.
Well, I didn't. You know? I didn't so, until our mutual friend Dave Johnson posted about it on this email list that we're on, and it intrigued me. And when I saw you were involved in it, you know, I emailed and said, let's talk. So you have these different funds. You have the 2018 U.S. House Fund. You have the WAVE 2018 Fund, the 2018 U.S. Senate Fund. So the money, the 2021 Redistricting Fund, that's important, and the 2018 Youth Student Fund. So you're funneling money into different areas like this.
Yeah, and actually the WAVE 2018 Fund is kind of like the mothership. It kind of gets spread among all the different funds. So if you're overwhelmed and you just want a one-click option, you know, and by the way, the money does not go to us. It goes straight to an ActBlue tandem page that splits the money. So, you know, if you give $100 and there's 65 groups, it'll give every group $1 and, you know, and change. But it adds up, you know, over time. So we're curating this fund, and you know, it's all a work in progress. We just did this house analysis of 65 house districts and found, you know, because often, you know, it's easy to find these kind of groups in cities, you know, but finding the group that's in, you know, that's in Kansas 2 or Kansas 3 is harder, you know? And so, but we found great groups, and some of them were like, you know, we give them their first $1,000 or their first $1,000 in C4 money or their first $5,000 in C4 money. And it makes a huge difference. And then they're like, oh, wow, we can run a program or a bigger program. You know, so, and some of them are at the other end of the scale are groups that have huge reach that, you know, will register 100,000 voters, you know, that are actually like have more, more kind of reach in their area than the Democratic Party, you know, but
sure. Well, a lot of times, you know, the party will come into a district and shove a candidate into, you know, usually as some, you know, conservative candidate said, this is who, you know, you should back, when the community has their own progressive candidate that they really like. And the party is out of touch. It's the on the ground, the grassroots organizations, people who live in the community who know best. They're the ones already doing the work. That's what's different about this. It's not outsiders coming in and telling the people in any given community how to vote or who to vote for. It's working with the people, the activists who are already there and giving them tools and, well, money to do what they do, which is, I'm surprised no one's done this before.
Yeah, now you're getting me inspired. I'm like, yeah, let me sign up for that. it is one of those weird things like, wait, this doesn't exist. Like, nobody's made a list of these groups and made it easy to donate to them. Like, what, where's our brain, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, I think it's because people tend to think in like these big top-down solutions, as opposed to like looking at what's already going on in communities and how do we support that to go to scale, you know? And it's I love doing it so much. I was just talking to these organizers in Michigan last night until like midnight about, you know, their vision for combining, you know, criminal justice with, you know, and prosecutor races that are so motivating locally with organizing people and turning people out. And I just got so inspired and I just wanted to give them all the money, you know, and like almost every group we talked to were like, oh, we got to get you more money, you know, and, you know, but most people are just kind of disconnected from, you know, from local organizing and local organizations. So they don't get to feel that inspiration. So we're trying to make those connections so people get, you know, because God, if you talk to these groups, you'd be like, oh my God, I want to do everything I can to help you.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a funny place because we're like, how do we make this something that everyone knows about? Like, you know, same as like the Red Cross, like when you know, or like a better version of the Red Cross, or, you know, like when there's a special election somewhere, like right now we're giving money to, you know, groups that are in Ohio 12 in the special election next week. And also the prosecutor race in St. Louis. People don't know, you know, in the wake of Ferguson, like the prosecutor that kind of did a bad job there is up for election right now and has a challenger on Tuesday, and the groups are really amped up about it. And they're the same groups that we're going to need, you know, to turn out in Black communities in St. Louis in the general election to ensure we have, you know, keep that Senate seat. So, it's really fun and interesting. And so we're actually trying this thing of saying like, hey, if you want to organize a house party, it could be like three people and just like, check out the website and learn about it together. You know, it's so, you know, what we say is like, you don't have to do this alone, you know, like at least like do it with a friend, do it with 10 friends, just people you want to have dinner or brunch with anyway, make it a dinner party and, you know, learn about like a new layer of these groups. And then adopt one or adopt a state or, you know,
or a cause.
And it's just like, yeah. And the other thing is people don't make the connection. You know, some people are like, I have my political donations and then I have my charity donations that I get a tax write off for.
Well,
people don't make the connection that like you can give to, you know, there are a lot of groups that are totally nonpartisan that are turning out voters and communities of color in a totally nonpartisan way, and you can get a tax donation. You can get a tax write-off. People don't donate the connection. So, you know, some people are like, I have my political donations, and then I have my charity donation.
Uh-oh, I think I just lost you, Billy. There you are. Yep.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yep. I'm trying to put the URL movement.vote into the YouTube chat room, into actually both chat rooms, so people can go
Nicole,
visit while they're listening. Now, you've already raised a lot of money. Where's your money coming from? Is it mostly small individual donors, or do you have or big donors, or a combination of?
It's a combination. It's really the whole spectrum. The bigger donors like have kind of weighed on the scale, you know.
Uh-huh.
So
sure.
So what we really want to do, we don't want to be, you know, dependent on, like, these groups should not be dependent on big donors, right? Like, we need to all pitch in to, you know, at whatever level we can, you know, so that the movement is supported by the people, not by, you know, rich people.
Of course.
You know,
right.
So.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is you are targeting specific races. I think you said like 64 House races that are winnable. So you're focusing in on those communities.
Yeah. Well, it's so, our targeting is, you know, all the House races, all the Senate races, all the governor races,
mm-hmm.
you know, really important, you know, down ballot races like secretaries of states, chambers, ballot measures.
That's great.
We really look at everything that most is going to matter.
Mm-hmm.
And then we look for overlays, you know, so we really try to move as much money as we can to, you know, to Florida, you know, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, the,
mm-hmm.
you know, the states. And just to like zoom out a little bit, you know, like why we're doing this, like why I have like devoted my life to this,
yeah,
is, you know, it's just thinking back to election night in 2016 and how awful that was and how awful everything has been since then.
Uh-huh.
And then looking forward to, like, you know, November 3rd, 2020, which is when we really have our next big chance to make sure Trump doesn't get a second term,
mm-hmm.
you know, and really focusing on, you know, if we don't do that, you know, we lost like 77,000 votes in three states, you know,
yeah.
in Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. And if the election were held today, you know, whoever the Democrat is, we'd probably win the popular vote by 3 million or 5 million votes because of California and, you know, but if could probably come down to another like razor close race in those three states and we could lose again.
Yeah.
So we can't be complacent about that. We have to, like, you know, really keep our eyes on the prize that, like, you know, whatever else we're doing, whatever else we care about, if we're not investing every, you know, like everything we have to try to support anyone who's trying to organize in those three states,
mm-hmm.
you know, plus Florida, which was just as close per capita, you know, plus a few others, you know, like, we could very easily get a Trump second term, and it'll be our fault.
Yeah.
Because we didn't, like, when I talk to organizers in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania, they're like, what's going on? We thought people would, like, want to invest in our states because, like, it's like the future of the world depends on,
that's right,
you know, a couple votes in our states, but like somehow people haven't made that connection in their heads, and like we're still not getting any money just like before.
Hmm.
And it's like, what, you know, what kind of crazy idiots are we, you know, like what's wrong with us? Like, like, you know, like, if we can move to those states, we should move to them. If we have friends in those states, we should encourage them. If we can move money, we should move money.
Right.
You know, and, you know, and there are lots of other important states too. But I, you know, like, so yeah. And we care about everywhere, like everywhere matters, you know?
Sure.
But,
But you're also looking at the electoral map and working strategically to impact where races are, you know, where races can be won. Billy Wimsett is his name. You can follow him on Twitter at Billy Wimsett. At Movement Vote is the Twitter account for Movement Voter Project, and movement.vote is the website. Billy, thank you so much. The work you're doing is so important, and I love the way this organization is working. So thank you for coming on and telling us all about it. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. This is one of the only media hits we've gotten, so thank you so much.
Oh, no. Well,
any way that anyone out there can spread the word, you know, from your own social media, like,
you got
it. So grateful, because people don't even know this exists.
Well, they do now.